We reached the upper levels unopposed. I tried not to look too closely at the evidence of Anna's extended firefight up here, while Sakura and I were busy below, and Sakura looked straight ahead until we were out of the area. We didn't pass through the room with the strange tank, which I was just as happy to miss, and emerged from a bulkhead onto the road running across the top of the dam. No guards were in evidence up here either, but there was a vehicle parked at the far side, some kind of big SUV, and that seemed like our best bet for a quick exit, so we made for it. Halfway across the dam, a helicopter appeared from beyond the dam and fixed us with its night sun while it maneuvered into position to land between us and the truck. For a second, I wondered if it was Zoner, having arranged a more direct extraction for us, but closer examination showed it was a Soviet-built Hind, one of their big tank busters, and it had Shadaloo markings. It crouched on the concrete between us and our escape, its rotors winding down, and then 8 or 10 figures alighted from the side door. Most remained by the chopper, fanning out into a neat squad defensive formation, but 2 broke away from the group and walked toward us, silhouetted from behind by the beam of the still-lit searchlight. The only good thing I could identify about this was that neither of the people approaching us could be bison. They were both too small, and, now that I looked a little closer, too woman-shaped. Then the searchlight went out, replaced by area floodlights up on poles along the brow of the dam, and it all became clear. Well, one of them did. The other remained a bit behind in the shadows. "Hello, Laura," I said. "Long time. I hope you didn't get into too much trouble over the Siberia thing." Laura Roxanne stared at me coldly from below her Shadaloo officer's cap. She looked like she'd had a hard week. One of her arms was in a sling and a cast. She had bandages covering part of her face and one ear, and she was walking stiffly, her left knee not bending much, with the aid of a Lofstrand crutch in her good hand. "So," she said, "the Pretender. I might have known." After the day I'd had, I wasn't going to rise to that bait. "Sakura, cover your ears so you don't have to hear me tell this nice lady to get the fuck out of my way."
"Hi, Sensei," Sakura replied, grinning.
Laura's face darkened a little further.
"Sensei," she said, "you dare presume to take a student? To pass on your perverted mockery of the true art to a child?"
"Yeah, go figure," I said. "I thought I'd teach someone who came to me of her own free will instead of brainwashing the help like your boss. It's less efficient, but kind of more rewarding somehow." She nodded her fists.
"You will not speak of Lord Bison in that way," she said.
"No? Well, you know, this experience today has taught me something about Bison," I told her conversationally. "You might like this. I've discovered that there's at least one point, very possibly only one, but definitely at least one, on which he and I agree." Everyone stared at me, Laura included. I let them hang a moment, then explained, "If I had his resources, I would totally have a Praetorian guard of cute girls in commando outfits. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, I would endeavor to keep things professional in the shop at all times, and I bet I'd offer a better benefits package, but the actual, you know, aesthetic?" I nodded. "I'm down with that. Me, Bison, and Colonel Gaddafi, we're all on that bus together." Then, while she audibly ground her teeth, I cracked my knuckles and said, "Now, I've had a long day and I want my bed. And no offense, but you look like you could stand some more rack time yourself. Are you late because you got hit by a bus on the way here?"
"Something like that," I heard Logan mutter with dark satisfaction behind me.
"So what do you say you admit you lost this time and we all walk away?" I proposed. Laura stared hard at me for a moment, as if trying to kill me with her thoughts. When that didn't work, she limped aside and said sharply,
"Since you seem to appreciate the dolls so much, here is another one. DeCapra!"
The other figure who had followed her over from the Hind stepped out of the shadows. She was another girl in the dark commando sweater-like uniform, the one Sakura and I had thought were wearing, complete with a little yellow fake necktie on the front.
except she had on black tights and a full-face mask with triangular eye slots, no nose or mouth, and a dull gunmetal blue finish. She was blonde, with her hair done up in a pair of long braids, a jagged little forelock sticking out in front between her garrison cap and the top of her mask. That last detail I found particularly arresting in that moment. Blonde hair in long braids is neither here nor there, but that forelock was very distinctive. I knew someone else who had one just like it, and I heard that very someone gasp with startled recognition at that moment. "I don't think I'm going to like this," I murmured. "I can guarantee you won't," Laura replied with a faint smirk. "Let's see how well your new enhancements perform in actual combat, shall we, number 12?
"Affirmative, Commander," the masked girl replied, her slightly muffled voice flat and lifeless.
"Engage, then," Laura told her. "Full sanction. Kill them." The masked girl, DeCapra, apparently, stepped forward, the blank eyeholes of her mask fixed on me. She raised her fists in front of her chest, crossing her arms at the wrists, and with a very familiar metallic sound, three gleaming blades sprouted from the back of each hand, extending in an eye blink to nearly the length of her forearms again.
"Yep, called it," I muttered, and then she was on me.
The other girls in the commando outfits had fought eerily like Cammy. This one fought, as indeed she now looked, like a strange combination of Cammy and Logan. The mask gave her a passing resemblance to Vega, master of the Spanish ninja, as well, but nothing in her brutally efficient fighting style called to mind Vega's pointless, narcissistic flamboyance. This girl, this creature, just wanted me dead, as thoroughly as possible and as fast as possible. And that might be very fast indeed, because so was she. Adrenaline fizzed in my veins as her claws flashed out, passing just barely to the left, then just barely to the right, of my head. The rush erased the aches and pains of the fight in the detention room. I dodged and weaved, using every evasive trick I knew to keep those blades away from me. My best chance at avoiding a gutting was to get inside her reach, but that was no guarantee of success, because she was, like Cammy, obviously well-trained in close-quarter combat. I got inside the arc of her right arm, deflecting her claws away with a blow to the inside of her wrist. She half-turned, cold blue eyes glinting emotionlessly through the mask, and rammed the other elbow into my face. That hurt a lot more than it really should have, even under the circumstances, and I stumbled back and barely ducked a swipe aimed at my eyes. That elbow strike was like getting hit in the face with a length of rebar. Between that and the claws, I understood why. Remember how I had said I didn't even want to know what they did in the room with the big fish tank covered in articulated robot drills? I think I know now. I wondered if this was, in fact, the same facility, where a secret branch of the Canadian government had experimented on certain members of the armed forces, trying to turn them into super soldiers by bonding a nearly indestructible metal to their bones. Logan knew that had happened to him, and that the government had probably been responsible, but not where. And I knew that this place had originally been part of the same or a similar project before the Canadians wound it up and Chateauloup took over. I decided, as DeCapra nearly took off one of my arms, that this was not the time to be thinking about that. It was time to get off my ass and start fighting back rather than just defending myself. I had been in a bit of a slump, fighting-wise, for a little while now. It started with the aftermath of my World Warrior bout with Ryu, in which, for convoluted reasons having to do with pig-headedness, not my own, and pride, my own, I'd had to go straight from barely beating Ryu to getting my head kicked in by Ken. I hadn't quite recovered from that when I found myself unexpectedly squaring off against Guile at Area 51 and taking an even worse drubbing. Two losses in a row weren't going to look too good on my Street Fighter Tournament record card. Since then, I hadn't had a ranked fight, hadn't had any fights at all, apart from sparring with Sakura. Nobody on the circuit had challenged me, and with the losses and the whole business with Cammy, I hadn't had the heart to go looking for a match myself. Today's warm-up against the goons in the basement and the fight with the two commando girls seemed to have re-engaged something. I felt myself firing on all cylinders, using all my skill to stay ahead of DeCapra's claws and get in the occasional counterattack. This was complicated slightly by the fact that I wanted always to stay between her and the others. I'm sure Logan was recovering quickly from his time in storage. That's what he does. But he'd only carved it to bits, and for reasons I couldn't quite identify, I didn't want to see that today. Cammy was still shocky, and I didn't want Sakura anywhere near those blades. And Anna... hell, I knew what she was going to do. I gave DeCapra an open-handed blow right on the fake knot of the little simulated necktie in the front of her sweater, driving her back a couple of paces, and used the time it bought me to turn and put out a warning hand, but it was too late. Anna was already drawing a bead with her sidearm. "Anna, wait, don't!" I yelled. But she fired. Her aim was good. The bullet hit DeCapra in the forehead, a bit to the right of center, in the gap between her hat and mask. The impact made a sharp metallic tang and a fat yellow spark, and she jerked backward, wobbled slightly, but didn't go down. She blinked twice, shaking her head, and before my eyes the ugly tear in the skin of her forehead closed and disappeared as though it had never been there. "Great, yeah, she regenerates too," I muttered. "Of course." "Ballistic attack ineffectual," DeCapra murmured in that same flat voice, then renewed her efforts to fillet me. Something about that struck me as faintly odd, but I was too busy defending myself to mull over what it really meant. The other two commando girls had been kind of snarky. This one had all the personality of drywall. It's funny the things you notice about a girl when she's trying to kill you. The style of Laerdrit I specialize in is called Icon of Stone. When I'm fully concentrating on a fight, like I was just then, I can do one of two things with the vital energies within me, what Chinese martial artists call qi, and my own form calls the eponymous lair. Normally I push it outward, where, at least in my case, it takes on a character not unlike electricity. But in a situation like this, with an opponent much swifter than I and armed with deadly weapons, I can also pull it inward and... well, the mental image I always get is one of compression. My lair crystallizes in and around me. I don't actually turn to stone, that's impossible. But if you hit me, you might just think I had. I don't actually use the icon technique itself very often. It makes me much slower than normal, and I'm not one of the speediest fighters on the tour to begin with. But in a situation like this, against someone so much faster than I am anyway, and armed with a half dozen razor-sharp blades, it's just the thing. It didn't make me invulnerable to DeCapra's blades, but it did mean that unless she scored a direct hit, the worst harm she could inflict was a nasty cut. Nasty cuts I could deal with later. Being disemboweled, not so much. We went back and forth a few more times, neither of us ever quite taking the worst of an exchange. The blows that landed were almost all kicks. I managed to avoid or block all but a few glancing hits with her claws, but the effort either kept me out of punching range or occupied my arms with deflecting her. She kicked like a mule, but I was deep into the icon now and didn't feel them much. I'd feel them later, for sure, but the important thing right now was to make sure there was a later. Even now, that wasn't a given. I couldn't sustain this level of concentration forever. I could already feel fatigue creeping up on me, though still at a level where I could push it out of my mind and keep slugging. DeCapra, too, was starting to move a little more slowly and a little more sloppily, but I knew from years of sparring with Logan that she needed only a short breather to get a second, third, or even fourth wind. At the moment, we were about evenly matched, fortitude and fury striking a delicate balance. I recognized that it would take one of us playing a wild card to tilt the fight seriously in either direction. And, as my defenses absorbed a furious flurry of kicks and elbows, I realized that I had one to play. I risked a glance back over my shoulder and saw that Sakura's attention was riveted on the fight. We made an infinitesimal moment of eye contact, and she knew what she had to do. Then I turned away again, bore in on DeCapra, and launched a series of punches I knew she would block, try a kick I knew she would dodge, faded back from her counterattack, and stumbled, nearly falling over backward. The icon deserted me as my concentration broke. I felt all the cuts and scrapes I'd absorbed from DeCapra's claws light up with pain as they started to bleed. My back arched. I barely managed to stay under a wide, two-handed claw sweep. The phrase, "limbo for your life," raced through my brain, and I saw DeCapra leap, her eyes still devoid of any spark. My back hit the concrete. DeCapra filled the sky above me, her claws glinting, ready to cleave into my chest like so many butcher knives. From somewhere above my head came Sakura's voice. Shinku! Hadouken! Her eyes leaving me, Dakapra made the very slightest sound of surprise, and then a bolt of blue-white fire swatted her out of the air like the fist of an angry god, sending her tumbling halfway back to Laura's position. I sprang to my feet and raced in. She was disciplined, her self-possession exceptional. She'd landed on her feet, and in another half-second she would be ready for more, despite the thunderclap punch Sakura's fireball had given her. But I wasn't going to give her half a second, because I was already executing my all-or-nothing wrap-up. The seven-maneuver chain of techniques Zoner, in a fit of puckishness, had dubbed Murder on the Orient Express. This was either going to work or get me killed, but against this woman on this day it was all I had left. Years of periodic sparring with Logan had taught me a few things about fighting someone with metallized bones. First among them, although it's trickier to do it without hurting yourself, never underestimate the value of the good old-fashioned sock on the jaw. A person with an unbreakable skull can still be concussed. Failing that, go for the soft parts. Even to a regenerating opponent, body blows hurt. By the third punch, I was pretty sure my strategy was going to work. When I came out of the double kick and she made no attempt whatever to stop me grabbing the front of her uniform and slamming her to the ground, I knew it was going to work. I almost felt bad about completing the sequence by grounding on one knee alongside her as she hit the concrete and bouncing her armored skull off the ground with a leer-flared elbow. But not quite. After all, she was going to live, which was more than she had planned for me. I straightened up, dusting off my hands, and regarded her.
"That ought to hold you for a while," I panted.
As if in reply, her mask, cracked in the middle by my final blow, split in two and fell away to either side, revealing her unconscious face.
"What the?"
I said, and then the world exploded in a flash of white light as something hit the back of my head like a wrecking ball. The Baroness. I do not know what it was about the masked girl that so shocked Benjamin, but he was frozen in disbelief for nearly a full second, more than enough time for the woman in the Chateloup officer's uniform, Laura, I think he had called her, battered though she was, to bash him in the back of the head with the shock baton built into her crutch and send him toppling off the dam into the lake. With a shocked cry, the blonde girl he'd apparently come here to rescue dove after him. His young apprentice, to her credit, responded to this affront with energy and dispatch, smashing the weapon from Laura's hand and calling her a name so filthy I would ground my teenage daughter, if I had one, for a month for uttering it. She apparently understood the Japanese curse as well. Her face went red and she snarled, "You dare call me a cheat after the shabby trick the two of you used to defeat Dakapra?" "Didn't Bison teach you the law?" Sakura replied. "Valdritkar and Eldritkar, when the fight is at hand, are one combatant." She balled her fists and blue-white flames began to flicker around them. "Ask him about it when you come to." The Chateloup officer drew a pistol, aimed it at her, and said, "I think not." "Now who's cheating?" Sakura asked. "This isn't a game, little girl," Laura said coldly. "This is a war, and in war there are no rules."
"Is that so? Okay,"
Sakura said, not backing down. Then she snapped,
"Baroness, shoot her!"
My admiration for the child's spirit grew. It was a bluff, of course. She hated the very thought of me shooting anyone else, but one delivered with such conviction that Laura believed it. And, of course, I fully intended to shoot the woman anyway. Her bead on Sakura faltered slightly as she flicked her eyes to me and saw that I had her dead to rights, assuming she didn't have a metal-plated skull like that other girl. She could kill Sakura, but she would die instantly thereafter. Behind her, the troops she'd brought with her were hustling forward, their weapons at the ready. Beside me, Logan deployed his own claws. For a very long moment, we all balanced on the edge of an explosion that promised to be an unhappy ending to everyone's day. And then we were all reminded, loudly and chaotically, in his case, could it have been any other way,
that Benjamin had another partner long before he ever met his little Japanese firebrand.
Megazone. 5 seconds, I said, banking into a pylon turn to port. Got your targets?
Got 'em,
Jubilee replied in my headset.
Man, this telesite helmet thing kicks ass.
Light 'em up, I told her, and over the thrum of the Prince's engines, I heard the comforting rip-roar of the minigun opening up. Out the side window, I could see the tracers reaching for the top of the dam.
Woo-hoo!
Jubilee yelled, and I noticed that she'd thoughtfully squelched her mic first so she didn't blow my ear off. I could totally get behind the sentiment, because hanging out the port side door of a C-130 on a bungee harness and letting the bad guys have it with a pintle-mounted GAU-17A is one of life's most sublime pleasures.
Griffin. I wasn't out for very long. Hitting the lake made sure of that. Alkali Lake is well named, and boy, I tell you what, when you're lightly covered in cuts, that shit stings. I surfaced, gasping, and was glad to find myself behind the dam in the lake. It's a much longer fall down the other side. And here's how I know I wasn't out for long. I had barely broken the surface when Cammy appeared beside me. I think I was still a little out of it, because my initial reaction to that was to draw back and get ready to slug her if I had to.
Hey, she said, it's me.
And I knew that burr and the spark in those eyes. Blinking the stinging alkaline water out of my own eyes, I looked around, trying to get my bearings. From about 10 feet above me, at the top of the dam, I could hear Sakura yelling and what sounded like automatic weapons being readied. Oh, hell, not good, I said, trying to find somewhere I could climb up the dam. There was an access ladder, really just bent lengths of iron bar set into the concrete, and I started struggling up the slick metal rungs as fast as I could haul myself. The voices from above got sharper. Panic started to seize me as I pictured Sakura's fury getting her killed before I could reach. Then I heard another, even more familiar sound, and I knew everything was going to be okay. I got to the top of the ladder and raised my head above the level of the dam just in time to see the Prince's door gun open up on Laura and her crew, sending them stumbling back in a hail of plastic pellets and glow stick chemicals, cursing, their weapons flung from their hands by the impacts. It was a bit like watching a cartoon representation of people being attacked by bees. Man, good old Zoner. Who else has a minigun set up for riot control? 1,800 tiny bean bags and little gel packets of glow juice per minute will leave a hell of a bruise. I think they were trying to get to the helicopter, but a moment later the minigun fire ceased momentarily, and a streak of fire raced out of the sky, blowing it to bits. Cross off one of our half-dozen stingers, but it was for a good cause. In the ensuing fiery confusion, Laura and her bodyguards managed to disappear, probably down a bolt hole into the dam itself. I think Sakura was primed to go after them, but I, for one, had had enough excitement for one night. I helped Cammy back up onto the dam, and we all made good our escape while the getting was good. As we passed the crater where DeCapra had been, I took a lingering look before hurrying on. There was nothing there now but the halves of her mask. The Prince of Thebes droned eastward. There was enough room in the cargo hold, we hadn't loaded the extended crew module because of the parachute drop, that each of us could be off by him or herself, alone with whatever thoughts we had to contend with after the day. There were 4 of us back there on the flight back east. The Baroness had left us in the woods before we'd rendezvoused with the Prince on an old logging road. She knew Zoner wouldn't be too happy to see her, and besides, she had her own agenda to pursue. I suspected it wasn't the last we'd see of her. I came out of the mini-bathroom in the permanent quarters, having patched myself up with the first aid kit and swapped my soggy commando duds for a generic flight suit, and found Logan in the galley with a cup of noodles and a beer. Jubilee, tired out by the excitement of door gunner duty, was sacked out with fury in the lower bunk, the curtain partly drawn, and still looked utterly blissed about the whole experience.
"Thanks for getting me out of there, kid," said Logan.
"You'd do the same," I said. "Thank Jubilee. She came all the way across the country to tell us you were in a jam." I left out the part about my having been heading this way anyway. She hadn't known that, after all. Logan finished off his beer, put the bottle down next to the empty noodle cup, and got to his feet. I knew she'd find some good help. He closed the curtain on her bunk the rest of the way and chuckled, walking with me across the galley. "Ah, it's a funny thing, being sensei," he said. "You don't go looking for it, and one day it finds you. And before long you wonder what you ever did without him." "Yep. Yours is a real firecracker," he told me. "You should have seen her when she thought that woman from Shadaloo might have aced you. Speaking of which, I have to go talk to her. She's okay with danger and all, but when it kicked off, Anna wasted a guy right in her face. She wasn't expecting you to go there that fast." Logan nodded. "Hard thing to tackle. Kid's first trip to that hard white edge." I eyed him. That was poetic. He smiled. "I ain't just a pretty face," he said. Then he clapped me on the shoulder and went forward to the cockpit, and I went aft. If he had anything on his mind about his return visit to Alkali Lake, he preferred not to discuss it with me right now. That was okay. I had enough to deal with right now as it was. Sakura was in one of the jump seats near the side door, hanging onto a strap and looking out the porthole at nothing in particular. I sat down next to her and asked, "Hey, you okay?" She looked at me. "I think so. I'm sorry I freaked out like that. I mean, we got shot at and stuff in Transbelvia, but that was all just kind of a big adventure. I know Lawrence hit a few of those guys he was shooting at, and that Spanish woman, but I could at least tell myself they might have lived, and they weren't so close." She looked down at her black nylon jump jacket, then back at me. "I think I've actually got blood on me." "It's never easy," I told her. "It shouldn't be easy. But you have to remember that you didn't kill him, and if one of us hadn't done something, he would have tried to kill us. You or I could probably have disabled him without permanently hurting him, but Anna's different. She used to be nothing but a killer, and she hasn't completely shaken off that..." A phrase Ryu had used once to describe some inner conflict of his that I only abstractly understood came to mind. "That killing intent." I put my hand on her shoulder. "You did a great job tonight. You were totally on the ball in both fights. You probably saved my life against DiCapra. And you are absolutely the bravest little girl in the world." She sniffled slightly and gave me a half-hearted glare. "I'm 15, she said. Still, I gave her shoulder a squeeze. "I mean it. You were amazing. Even Logan was impressed, and he doesn't impress easy. I couldn't have done this without you. You're probably going to have to come back to what happened with Anna again. Maybe a few times. That's okay. Understand? We can face up to it as many times as you want. Don't be afraid to tell me about anything that's bothering you. Okay?" Sakura nodded. "Okay." Then she gave me a smile and said, "Right now I think you better go talk to Cammy." I smiled and hugged her. "Good soldier," I told her. "Thanks," she said, returning it. Cammy was all the way at the back of the hold, in the seat where I'd been sitting on the way to the parachute drop. She, too, had changed her wet clothes for a flight suit, of which Zoner and I kept a stock in the Prince for just such contingencies. She wasn't looking out the window. She wasn't really looking at anything. When I sat down next to her, she leaned away a little and didn't look at me. "Are you okay?" I asked. It seemed to be the question of the night. "No," she said. "What's wrong?" I don't want to talk about it." "How can I help you if I don't know what it is?" She turned to look at me then, her eyes sad. "If you knew what it was, you wouldn't want to help me." I frowned. What could possibly cause me to not want to help you? I just fought my way through half of Shadaloo's North American operation to get you, and I think the other half to get you out. She hesitated, then sighed and said miserably,
I suppose you'll find out sooner and later anyway.
She sat silently for a long moment, looking down at the deck plates, then met my eyes and said, "Those commando girls, the ones you and Sokka fought tonight. Bison's personal guard. I used to be one of them."
I nodded. "Yeah, I know. The Brigadier told me the other day, when he told me where to find you."
She stared at me in surprise, then scowled. "I might have known he knew. Which means Am does too. But..." The scowl cleared, replaced with a worried expression.
"You knew? And you came to get me anyway?"
"Yeah, absolutely."
"Why? I know how much you hate Bison. Why would you risk your life for..."
She grappled with the notion for a moment, then said bitterly,
"One of his toys."
"Well," I said thoughtfully, "I suppose..." I put my hand to the side of her face, the side with the little triangular scar on it, and just looked into her eyes for a few seconds. The same blue, but so full of life they were completely different. "I suppose it's because I'm kind of in love with you," I said. Cammy blinked at me, startled almost out of her funk.
"You what?" she managed after a few moments.
"Actually, I doubt there's any kind of about it," I said. "I don't know that I'd have gone through tonight for kind of love."
You can say that. After what I did to you."
"What M made you do to me?"
"After finding out what I am."
"What you were. Look, I know Bison. I know his methods, his personality, his warped sense of humor. I know what he can do to people's minds, their souls. Not many ever come back from where it seems you've been. It's probably just as well you don't remember it." I drew her into a hug. She resisted, but only for a moment. "The important thing to me is that you are back. You're who you are, not some soldier doll. And that's good enough for me." She sat passively in my arms for a moment, then asked,
"Do you have a phone?"
That struck me as a slightly odd question, but I did have one, so I turned her loose and handed it over. Cammy flipped it open, dialed a long number from memory, and put it to her ear. "White," she said, her voice suddenly crisp and businesslike, then rattled off the second lengthy code.
"Give me M. Urgent."
A pause.
"Ma'am?"
"Yes."
"No. Mission only a partial success. Shadaloo will almost certainly abandon the facility. Significant assets disrupted, but the key personnel escaped, and 002 is dead."
"Yes, I saw it myself."
"No, ma'am."
"No."
"Further debriefing will have to be conducted later, by remote link."
As I watched, her face hardened, her eyes glittering angrily in the dim night lighting of the hold.
"Because, ma'am, I'm very tired now, and effective immediately I resign. Good morning."
Then she snapped the phone shut, stuck it back in my top pocket, and said with exaggerated, slightly desperate calm,
"There. That's done. Now, just hold me, will you? Very tight. For a long time."
I smiled. "I'm right here," I said, doing as I was asked, "and I'm not going away." The seating arrangement was not the most comfortable, but we were both very tired. Cammy drifted off before me, and as the Prince of Thebes charged toward the rising sun, I spent 100 miles or so just appreciating the lines of her sleeping face. The intercom near the cargo door clicked, and Zoner's voice asked,
"Griff, everything okay back there?"
I managed to reach and press the button without disturbing Cammy. "Everything's just fine back here," I said. It wasn't really, of course. Not with everything I'd seen and experienced that day rattling around in my head. I hadn't given much thought to the two girls Sakura and I had fought at the time. They had seemed plenty sharp enough, even snarky, and I had assumed they had signed on the dotted line and gone into the villainous minion game with full awareness of how it was played, as Laura evidently had. DeCopra's dead eyes and flat voice made me wonder if I could have been mistaken. And the fact that the face under the mask looked just like Cammy's, but for the missing scar, made me wonder if there were more to my Scottish Angel's unknown story, the one missing even from her own memory, than I had ever suspected. Not that it would change how I felt about her, if there were. I knew that, deep inside me, just sitting there looking at her face. Whoever she once had been, I loved her now, and I had her back. That was all that mattered today. With that thought in my mind, I finally went to sleep. End Battle 06.